Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Brett Larkin studied at Ishta Yoga in 2005, where I had the pleasure to be one of her trainers. She describes what went from using YouTube as a way to memorize her own sequence into a career as a beloved online yoga teacher. Today, Brett has more than 250,000 subscribers to her YouTube channel. She won YouTube's Next Up Award as one of the top emerging YouTube channels of 2017. Plus, she's the founder of Uplifted Yoga, a private online yoga and meditation community empowering students to personalize their practice and ignite their best life on and off the mat. She's authored over 4 yoga DVDs and instructed at top studios, companies like Google and Pinterest, and on retreats around the world. I had the chance to hear some of Brett's history since I saw her last and to get her advice for teachers interested in the online world. Enjoy. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Peter.
So nice to see you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, what a treat.
I know, it's so fun to reconnect with you after so many years. One of my first teachers. Such an honor to be here.
Well, I'm honored to have you here. And I watch you go by on Instagram and Facebook, and you know, it feels like we're almost connected that way, but it's really nice to be connecting in person.
Yes, I know. Chatting face-to-face, even if it's over Skype, is much better than social media.
Exactly. Yeah. And where are you living now?
I'm living in Seattle. So this is new. I used to live in San Francisco Bay Area since I left
New
York.
That's what I remembered.
Actually, yes. So we just moved up here a couple months ago. So it's a big change, but it's exciting at the same time. So.
Yeah. And what moved you there?
My husband's job primarily, and we had a baby, as I was telling you a little earlier. So
congratulations.
Yeah, we just wanted to kind of have a fresh start now that we're a family, and the Bay Area is very wonderful, but it's not the greatest place, we felt, for you know, if we wanted to have a lot of kids. So it's expensive. It's really expensive and beautiful. Yeah. But we were just also ready to try something new. My husband had been in the Bay for I think over a decade. And I, at that point, had been there 6 years. So it's a new adventure for us and we're excited.
Yay. Yeah. Well, cool. So what's your initial impressions of Seattle?
We really like it. It's really clean. It really reminds us, you just were mentioning the Netherlands. So it really reminds us of the Netherlands in a weird way. It's just like really family focused and kid friendly and again, clean and beautiful and mountains and lush greenery. California is very dry, which I don't think you realize when you live there. And then, so it's fun. It's luscious and mountainous and we see mountains. Nice. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I remember when I lived in Los Angeles, the thing I really missed from being from the East Coast was woods.
Yeah.
They have no woods. They have trees, but none of that density of green.
Yeah, we have lots of green, and then we have seasons. So, like, it's spring right now, and we see flowers. Bay Area is sort of like permafall, is what I call it, which, again, this is great. Nothing wrong with it. But it's just fun to, you know, we had snow this past winter, and we're going to have a real summer. So, yeah, that's all fun.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Just in time for Alexander to start enjoying things like being in the water in the summer.
Yes, exactly. Swim lessons is actually on my list of things I need to do as a mom. Haven't done that yet. So yes, that needs to happen this summer for sure.
Cool. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to chat with you on the podcast, in addition to just catching up, was that you were very early on interested in working with yoga online, doing things that reached an audience that way. I think even in your 300-hour teacher training, you had a project based on that, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah, I was always really interested in online and filmmaking, although that didn't seem obvious to me at the time. Like, I feel like it seems obvious looking in reverse, but at the time, I feel like I was just trying to contribute and share however I knew how to and however was most comfortable for me. And that just sort of happened to be online. Like, it wasn't premeditated as much as it was just kind of like fusing two of my interests together. So yeah, I know in reverse, it all looks like it was planned, but I promise everyone, like, I have no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. And I still, like, sometimes feel like I don't. So I just am figuring it out as I go.
And what were you working on when you got into teaching yoga before that?
So I worked at a video game company called Ubisoft for years and years. And then I worked in kind of the tech startup world in San Francisco before that, after I worked in video games. The work I did in video games was always either kind of primarily female based or movement based. So I started in video games writing games, cell phone games. This is pre-iPhone, for women. So there was like little dating games and fun things like that. And then I worked on games for the 11 to 13 year old girl market, which was great because I secretly am an 11 year old girl. So I made tons and tons of games for Nintendo handheld for girls. And then the Kinect, first Wii came out, actually. I don't know if you remember the Wii, but it's like you basically hold a remote and I primarily worked on dance games, which fit really well with fitness and yoga. And then I worked on Kinect, which was basically Microsoft's version of Nintendo's Wii, but you didn't even have a remote. It just read your body as you moved. So that was really, really fun. So I think I was really interested in technology and fitness and movement from the beginning. I was a dancer as a child, and it was really fun to bring the dance into the video game world because I felt like I could never really rise the ranks in the company that I was at because it was a very male-dominated culture. And then all of a sudden, we got all these contracts to make dance games. And I was like, I can do this, you know, like hand raise. And a lot of that was happening when I was doing my first trainings with you, actually, and other people at Ishta, where, you know, we have our common family, common roots.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the beginning. But even as a child, I loved making websites. My dad, who recently passed away, he passed away on New Year's, so it's still just a couple months. But it's funny looking back, I think, of how much he informed who I am. I think maybe we all have that when a parent passes away. But when I was really young, he was always encouraging me to make little movies. He got me like a camcorder. He was always really encouraging me to build little websites. I was like building drag and drop websites when I was like 11. So, and I enjoyed it. I really loved it. So bringing yoga into all of those things, I think it just felt easy for me because I naturally enjoyed them. I think a lot of yoga teachers ask me now, they're like, well, how can I bring it online? And I try to be really encouraging, but at the end of the day, you need to go where your strengths and interests lie. For me, I was always naturally interested in filmmaking. I went to a film school. I studied more writing than film, but, you know, this was a huge passion of mine from childhood. Same with creating websites and things like that. So you need to follow your passion, I guess. Like, you can't force a fit, right?
Right.
You're not. I mean, I'm not super great or into photography. And, you know, Instagram isn't a huge channel for me. YouTube is. I love filmmaking. So it's just, everyone's unique.
That's great advice.
Thanks.
So when you decided to go one step further and connect these two passions of yours, was there a lot of yoga in online around?
Yes. Yes,
I
yes and
there
no.
Was video.
Yes. So the first yoga class I ever did was to a Jason Crandall video on yogajournal.com before I found Ishta, before I trained to teach, or before I studied with you. That was my first experience with yoga. And I did that video over and over again. So video online existed, but it wasn't on YouTube yet, I don't think. It was, you know, it was just like a couple videos on Yoga Journal, and I don't even know where they were hosted or how they were hosted. Right. And then a couple years later, I think by the time I was in training, one of my friends from college told me she did yoga on YouTube. And I was like, really? There's yoga classes on YouTube? And she said, oh, yeah. But it didn't.
Is it cat yoga?
No, I know. It didn't catch me at the time. So I think there wasn't that much. And it's funny because when you reached out to me, you were like, let's talk about you being an early adopter of online yoga. And I'm like, I actually feel like I was really late to the party. Mm. I wish I had started doing what I do now on YouTube back when that college friend of mine had mentioned that, because that would be a whole different story. People who were like YouTubers then, like now they all are, you know, 5 million plus subscribers. They're gigantic. Uh-huh. But it didn't quite catch for me then. I think I was still nervous teaching. Honestly, I was really passionate about movement and dance video games. Like that was sort of the forefront for me. What happened was the Kinect blew up in terms of its launch and all the games that came out for it. And then the video game market shifted. Like then everyone was into Farmville. I don't know if you remember Farmville, but it was like these other types of video games on social platforms sort of took the forefront in terms of where the venture money was going, in terms of what people were interested in. And a lot of the Wii and the Kinect, the movement technology that was so exciting to me and so fun to work on in my, you know, 20s, early 20s and mid 20s, it just wasn't really a hot field anymore. Mm-hmm. And so when that passion kind of faded, or the interesting, fun, creative jobs around that sort of faded, I was working at a different tech company, but I don't think it was kind of like a job, right? I wasn't really passionate about it. And that's when I started filming some yoga classes and putting them on YouTube. But again, okay. with no, there was no real intention. Like, it's so hard for me to think back to what I was thinking at the time. Like, there was no, like, I'm going to post this. I was shocked when people commented. I was like, oh, someone watched this? You know what it was, and I've told the story so many times, but the real impulse for me in filming it was that I wanted to remember the sequence that I had designed.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I had filmed
for yourself.
For myself, yes, exactly. I was starting to teach at studios at that time, and it's a very nerve-wracking experience as a new yoga teacher, because you're like, oh, I want to remember my sequence, and I want to do a good job, and I want to practice my cueing. So filming myself seemed very natural. Every time I used to go to dance camp, because I went to dance camp, you know, intense dance camps when I was in high school. And, you know, I always had to videotape choreography. I usually would work with the teacher, and you had to send in a video of your, you know, ballet routine or your choreography to the camp in order to be accepted or to the program. Uh-huh. So this idea of sort of filming yourself to, you know, assess how you were doing or remember the sequence just seemed normal.
Right.
Me. So I designed this yoga sequence that I really, really loved and decided to film it on my friend's roof. And I guess I just put it on YouTube because it was free. Uh-huh. Right. So that was sort of the beginning. And then it got exciting after that.
Yeah. So then the model, I guess, that you're using for what you did then was to continue to create a more elaborate YouTube presence for lessons.
Yes, exactly.
Is that a valid description? Yeah.
Yeah. So basically people started liking and commenting on that video. And I was like, oh, I should make another video. So I did. And then, you know, again, it was still very informal. But then, you know, over weeks, I was like, oh, what if I posted one every week at the same time? I saw like other YouTube channels were doing that. I was like, oh, that makes sense. And then I was like, oh, you're supposed to subscribe to people on YouTube. Maybe I should ask people to subscribe. Maybe I should, you know, put a subscribe button on here. So I just sort of was slowly figuring out things as I went.
Very organically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the turning point was that it was growing slowly, slowly. I was still working a day job and I was teaching in studios. So I was busy. Mm-hmm. And the turning point was when I was invited to this conference that YouTube has for creators who are big on YouTube. So they invite a couple hundreds of people, but it's I think everyone has at least 10,000 subscribers, and then the big people have like 300,000. So I went, and I think at the time I had 10,000. That's how I got invited. And I go to the event, and I was the smallest channel, I feel like, at the whole event. Everyone I met had 60,000 subscribers, 70,000, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000. One of the women I met and connected with there had 300,000 at the time and now has 3 million 4 years later, 5 years later. Crazy. Yeah. So that conference was a huge turning point because all of a sudden I got to connect with all these other people. Very few, no one was doing yoga and very few were in the fitness space. A lot of them, it was all over. It was like video game people, beauty and makeup people, lots of people who taught photography or taught, you know, I don't know, woodworking, anything you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But the common denominator was that they all had big YouTube channels. They'd built up big YouTube channels. So at that conference, I got to talk to all these people, a lot of whom were doing YouTube as their full-time income or their full-time job, both YouTube and selling products off the back of YouTube or, mm-hmm. you know, having DVDs or things like that. So that's
using the YouTube as an advertising.
Exactly.
Method.
Yes. So mm-hmm. that was sort of the aha moment. Like, I remember that conference so distinctly. I don't remember anything that was talked about on stage. I just remember the networking and talking to all the other people there. And I remember driving home and it was like the world was a different color. I just went home and I told my husband at the time, actually, we may have not been married yet, but I remember telling him, like, my mind was just blowing up. Like, when I was driving home, my mind was just exploding with how much possibility there was and all these new insights that I had gained. I mean, the people there also were very generous. I mean, most people I've met, YouTubers, like, were very generous with one another in terms of sharing, like, strategies, ideas, contacts, things to do. So the woman at the time who had 300,000 subscribers, who now has 3 million, she was amazing. She took so much time to talk to me and just give me advice. She was a beauty, she's a beauty person, makeup person. But so much of the advice was relevant in terms of programming and content and titling things. And so she and one other guy who had a photography channel, they really stand out in my mind as people who just really helped me or helped show me what was possible.
Right. Yeah. And so when you went to, you know, from what you learned, the way you think about what you offer right now, mm-hmm. do you think of it as a introduction? Do you think about it as like a complete school or, you know, academy of, you know, your approach to yoga, or how are you phrasing it? It's so unusual for me to think about a thing that stands on its own, because so much of the way that I teach is interactive.
Right.
So it's interesting to ponder that.
Yes. Well, teaching on YouTube is very different from teaching in a classroom setting. For a long time, I was doing both. I was doing studios and YouTube, and I was all the way up until I gave birth, actually. And then it was after giving birth to my son that I just had to let the in-person stuff go, just because I didn't have time. It wasn't feasible. And the online was doing so well. It almost, I mean, for a whole year before that, my husband was like, why are you still teaching in studios? Like, this isn't worth your time. But I loved it, similar to you.
Right.
I love the interaction and there's so much value there. So I was really hesitant to give it up. So now I don't teach in studios. I just teach in YouTube. And, you know, YouTube shouldn't be a replacement for studios by any means. But I find the people who are really drawn to online yoga, it's either supplementing going to a studio or they just don't have access to high quality yoga instruction
right.
where they live. That's the majority of people who are part of my community and take trainings with me and do everything. It's like they just don't have access. And sometimes they do. They just really resonate with me as a teacher and you know, that and online works for them.
And that's where they can find you.
And that's where they can find me, yes. And I have done retreats all over the world, which has been really fun. And it's really shocking to me because I'll meet people on those retreats who'll come and they'll be really incredible at yoga in terms of their alignment and just really strong practitioners. And sometimes I talk to them and they say, oh, I've never been to a studio. This is my first time practicing in person. I've just been doing your videos. So when that happened once or twice, I started to get really even more excited about the potential, because I just thought, wow, if someone is this amazing at yoga and they've only ever done online videos, or some of them just even only my online videos, like if someone really wants to learn and listen to the cues, that they can do that. I think the gaming background was really helpful for me, because a lot of video games operate on what's called a freemium model, which basically means there's a free experience and then you can pay for a deeper experience. In video games, it's usually you pay to remove the ads or to access other levels. A lot of people who are listening, or you might have like apps on your phone where you've done that, right? It's right. Like you choose to pay. So that's kind of how I've always approached the YouTube yoga, right? Is that there's always a free offering so people can enjoy that. But for people who do want to go deeper or download the videos or access more videos on their phone or access affirmation audio tracks or do sort of more live calls with me where we break down alignment, then I have a paid offering as well. And I think studios do this too. Like they'll have donation classes and then they have workshops and paid classes and trainings and things like that. So the model is the same. It's very similar.
You're getting comments on your YouTube page for any episode. So you have a degree of interaction that way.
Yes. So.
And how does that feel?
It's great.
You feel connected to those people.
Oh, so connected. Yes. It's from that I established the paid offering, because I noticed that there was this just group of people in the YouTube comments who were really passionate and showing up every week. And YouTube's great for video watching and consumption, but it's not great for community. Now, like 5 years later, they built this thing called the community tab, but it's still just not, it's not that great. So I opened a Facebook group.
Right.
This is back when Facebook groups were still pretty new. That was sort of like for anyone who was practicing yoga with me to connect in a group context. And the Facebook group was great because, you know, there's a photo and so you can see someone's picture. And so what I noticed was once I got everyone in the group, they were connecting with each other in addition to me connecting and me answering questions. And so the Facebook group then eventually spun off into what became my paid offering, because I just started listening to what these people wanted, and they wanted a lot more feedback and interaction and types of classes. And I literally just did everything they told me to do.
That's good customer service.
Yes. Yeah. It's, and it was fun because, you know, they're really smart, and I learned so much from my students and my audience. I really have always let them take the lead and direct where things go. It's always surprising to me what they're interested in and what takes off. And I'm just like an eternal listener. I never presume to know, like even the trainings I put together, it's like people requested these trainings on these topics. So it's been a very responsive co-creation process, as opposed to like me masterminding something and then putting it out. So that's another piece of advice I give yoga teachers all the time, or new yoga teachers, right? Is to really figure out who's resonating with what you're putting out there, and then dialogue with them, create community with them, be responsive to what they want. You don't need to figure it all out on your own if you're in community with people.
Most of the podcasts I listen to stop right in the middle of really interesting conversations and tell me about watches, underwear, mattresses, food services, and even like odd things just like out of the blue that I can't even imagine why they're on. I'd rather not do that, so I've been trying to fund Peter's podcast with Patreon.com. You can go to patreon.com/Peter's podcast and subscribe by kicking me a buck, 10 bucks, 100 bucks, whatever makes sense to you. Please check it out and make this podcast commercial free. Thank you. Just a technical question. So I'm familiar with YouTube And just, you know, in sort of a general way, I'm not like a YouTube super user or anything. So when you have special content for a special audience, is that just something you're able to create like a paywall on some part of YouTube, or you do that through some separate system?
I do it through a separate system. Yep.
Okay.
It's a separate,
because I've taken other kinds of music courses that I had to, then it becomes like a different website.
Yeah, that's exactly the same with all my stuff. It's a separate website, and the software that I used also lets it be very mobile friendly. So I also have like an app that you can download on the App Store that gives you access and easily lets you download everything to your phone. I chose mobile first in everything I did. So pretty much all of my experiences and videos work better on a mobile phone. Hmm. I mean, they work on desktop too, but that was a big design choice I think I made early on. So that, I do think I was really early to the game in making that decision. And that's because a lot of the tech companies I was working with before, or as I was making the switch, were talking about mobile all the time and mobile first,
right,
and smartphone taking over. So I noticed even some colleagues of mine in the yoga space didn't make that choice, and they're all changing software and doing that now.
Mm.
So, yeah, so that was a place where I think my technology background, it felt risky at the time, but I think it really paid off.
Cool. When you're on retreat, obviously people come with you and they see you and they talk with you and you have chats with them live by voice and whatnot. But have you ever done that in the online space?
Oh,
done
yeah.
Done a kind of a chat thing?
Yep, I use Zoom, which is similar to Skype. We had even emailed mm-hmm. about using it for this, and it's sort of just like a conference, video conference calling tool. And so I do it with all the people in my paid community once a month. And then for certain trainings and things that people are doing, I usually am live. A standard week for me is I'm live doing video calls, video coaching, video training, usually 3 times a week or more. So I do get a lot of FaceTime with folks.
That's fantastic. And so the bigger population of people who are watching video with you, from that comes this culled section of people who want more.
Exactly.
And they take you up on that.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think about yoga in such a broad way these days. You know, it's like therapy as well as fitness, you know, and life direction and whatnot. Are you staying in the realm of teaching people asana, or are you doing other things as well?
No, I think I talk almost more about yoga off the mat than on the mat at this point. So yes, I really love the Yoga Sutras and the philosophy behind yoga. So I talk and teach about the sutras a lot. And then I love, love, love the chakras. So that's one of the things that I've really been working on in my own personal practice and focusing on, just because they're such a great tool or lens, I think, that people can hold on to explore a lot of these, you know, subtle, whether we want to call it subtle body or life coaching yourself or whatever, like the chakras are so helpful. So I have a lot of chakra specific content and challenges that I lead around the chakras, educational programs around the chakras. So that's of huge, huge interest to me. In my paid community too, we have a book club. So we're often all reading different self-development books at the same time and then coming together to discuss. So yes, I definitely see myself getting more and more interested. I still love anatomy and alignment, but more interested in that aspect of yoga, the yoga off the mat, and how do we have a really happy life as really my primary focus, because that's always why I've been interested in yoga. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never really been physical for me. It was always a way to reduce anxiety, because I suffered from massive anxiety when I was younger, and really just helped me cope with the daily ups and downs of life.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like the yoga world is going in two directions. One is that it's that, you know, what you just said and what I just said that I've been doing. And the other is it's like fusing with all kinds of things, dancing and, you know, sweating and this and that. And that both are going on simultaneously. And I guess that's just natural. But I'm excited that it is going in the route, in the direction of people finding that yoga is a way that they can channel this big, deep desire for meaning, and like community and personal meaning and what maybe they never got because there was no formal religion in their life or something like that. It's like this big chunk of what they can do to find this, what I think of as like real happiness, you know, santosha. So
yeah, yoga has just exploded. It's so big and there's so many different, I mean, it's funny because I feel like two people can say they went to a yoga class and they might have had such completely different experiences.
Right.
Like one might have been in a sweating room and doing fast Ashtanga style flows, sweating their guts out. And someone else might have, you know, just been doing like one of Alan's meditations, for example. Right.
Yeah.
Like it's just wild that it all gets called yoga. But I think it's cool. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It meets people where they are.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's something for anyone, no matter what they're interested
right.
in. And then what's great is as you continue to evolve, there's just so much to explore.
Right. The yoga is there.
Right.
And no matter what you're doing, there's going to be something. I mean, that's why people are doing it. There's something different about doing it from the other things they could be doing that are maybe without the concentration or without any balancing that's natural to the way asana practice works. So
yes, definitely.
Yeah. And on a totally different topic, or totally related but different, when you're doing your programming on your channel and on both of your, you know, platforms, are you doing all of the stuff yourself? Do you ever do groups or panels or have a variety of voices that you share?
No, it's primarily me. I have done work with a demo student, which has been really nice, especially for DVDs or series that I really want to focus on beginners, to have someone who I had a real beginner in my beginner program, which was really cool. So
yeah.
I think demo students are great. And then in the paid community, actually, there are a couple teachers, mentors who've kind of grown with me in the community who are now occasionally contributing videos and content, which is really fun and awesome to see. So I definitely, and I bring in guest speakers sometimes, and, you know, I try to make it, I try to for there to be a sprinkling of other people and other voices. But at the same time, I know a lot of people are there because they want my voice, you know, and they want my classes. So I like to feature folks, but it's still primarily me doing most everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. And you had a podcast too.
Yes, I did. I had my own podcast, which was called the Yoga Hacks Podcast. And then it kind of got rolled up into this larger podcast called the Savanna Podcast, which I hosted for almost 2 years, I want to say. And I interviewed such amazing people on the show. I wish I had got to interview you on the show. That would have been really fun, or Wendy, but it's on pause right now. So I may start it up again in the fall, in which case I'd love to have both of you on. It was a collaboration between me and Savanna Spirit, which is a really beautiful online kind of yoga. I'm like, how to describe them? They have yoga clothes, they have crystals, they have incense. It's like a beautiful kind of holistic marketplace store, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So they were the producers of the show and I was the host. So that was really, really fun. So yeah, we were kind of a team in putting that show on for a number of years.
Uh-huh. That's cool. You must have been started that when podcasts were like totally unheard of.
Yeah, I think the especially my first original one was very, very early. But again, podcasting, I love it, but it's not a passion the way the filmmaking and everything is. So while I did it, I never really figured out the iTunes algorithm, or I never really dived into it deep the way I did with YouTube. I really just found it a great way to share information beyond the yoga mat, right? Because when someone does a YouTube video, they just want to flow and work out. If I start a YouTube video like lecturing for 10 minutes, like no one watches. So yeah,
Interesting.
so the podcast was a great avenue, I think, to just chat with people and tell them all the things I wish I could have told them in the class. Yeah.
Plus the interviewing component of it is really nice because you get to talk to people
Yes.
who you're interested in what they have to say about things.
Yes.
So, yeah. Very cool. So, what do you have on your plate for going forward? Sounds like you have a very like a regular thing where, that's evolved and you're continuing with that. But are you expanding into anything new?
So I'm continuously creating content. So there's always new YouTube videos going up, new paid content going up. I have occasional courses always going up. I obviously did a huge dive into prenatal when I was pregnant, so that was a huge output. And I'm really interested in Kundalini yoga, or I have been for years, but I'm doing more and more trainings around that and starting to put more courses around that out as my own. Knowledge deepens and I continue to study. So that's a passion. I'm super passionate about teacher trainings and, helping people find the right training. There's another teacher I collaborate with on a training. So continuing to just provide educational opportunities, I think, for folks, especially those who don't have access to a really high quality studio nearby. I feel so lucky that I got to live like almost within walking distance of Ishta for however many years that happened. So I think it's a lot of content creation. That's pretty much my life.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But
And ha that I mean it's I'm actually that's amazing, like that you are creating so much content.
it's mind-boggling. I mean, honestly, sometimes I look at what I like I looked at what I did in 2018 and I was just like, wow, that's crazy. I mean, it can literally be hundreds of videos, and that's like not even counting like all the social media content that goes with the videos, or all the in the paid membership we also put together like little PDF, really pretty PDF like booklets for people with, writing and more information and plans and outlines of schedules of when to do things, just all suggestive, but it's a crazy output. I also have a yoga day planner that I design and put out every New Year's. I can hold it up for you here. Obviously, people listening won't be
Oh,
able to see
nice.
it, but so that's also something I do every year. So last year the theme was the chakras. Next year, this coming year, the theme is abundance and Lakshmi. So I'm super excited about that. So I have a lot on my plate. And yeah, throughout it all, I'm trying to figure out where to focus and where, it's just like any yogi or person or business owner, you're just like, where does it make the most sense to focus? Especially now that I have a family and I'm a busy mom. So it's an ongoing challenge for sure, but it's fun. I love what I do, and I feel so lucky that I get to teach yoga for a living. I think that's something I never thought would be possible. So to be able to live that dream is huge.
Well, congratulations
Thank you.
on making it happen.
Yes, thank you for teaching me so many of the things I know when I was a newly minted trainee in your class.
Yeah, for sure. So you said you've been studying Kundalini, and that's an inspiration for some of the content that you're coming up with. Is most of the inspiration from your continued learning, or are you tapping some other inner source for, what keeps you coming up with new ideas?
It's interesting. My grandmother was asking me, she's always like, how do you come up with so many videos or so many video ideas? And for me, that's just idea generation has never been an issue. I just have so many ideas of things I want to explore or pursue or things that have already been done, but I just want to do them in my own way or, you know, with my flavor put on top of them. And then I get so many requests from people as well of what they want to see. So honestly, it just feels never ending. Kundalini has been huge. I'm doing a lot of, you know, the official level two, level three trainings this year, which I'm super excited about. But I've been teaching Kundalini for a long time, even before I had the official trainings, just from my own direct experience, because it's been huge in my own practice. I found that Kundalini was really big for me in just transforming some of the mental blocks and things that were holding me back. So definitely teaching from my own personal experience there. And honestly, with all the yoga, I mean, I think when you're a new teacher, you're so nervous to try new things and you're really kind of staying by the book. But it's just like anything in life. The more you practice, the more you experience after you've taught hundreds of classes, you just start to trust your own voice more. And
sure,
you know, I'm doing a new series pretty soon. And so I've been to test the audio and test the editing. I've been doing a lot of my own classes. Sometimes I have like friends in the community who I ask to check out the video, make sure everything's okay. But for this series, I've just been doing them all myself. And I'm just like, oh, I love these classes. But I'm like, well, obviously I do. I design them for, you know, it's like exactly what I want to do in my body, or kind of, you know, moving a little slower than the standard yoga class or lingering in poses a little longer. Yin is something that I've also really, really been enjoying. I did a lot of myofascial release trainings. I also went to massage school amidst all this. And I practiced massage pretty informally. I mean, at my largest, I had a roster of just like 10 or 15 people I worked on. Mainly all were yoga teachers. But, you know, just continuing to figure out ways to work with the body, whether it's foam rolling or self-massage or things like that, have always been of interest to me, especially on YouTube, because you get a lot of people writing in about injuries or problems. So it's nice to be able to point those people to specific videos that I have that are like, hey, do this foam rolling for your hips, or try this, or do this yin class if this is too fast or challenging for you, or something like that. Not that yin's not challenging. Yin can be very challenging. But yeah, I think I've really worked to build up a big variety for folks. So, and that's felt organic to me. I mean, I only teach what I do in my own personal practice. I don't teach anything that I don't do in my own personal practice. And I tell anyone who studies with me the same thing, like, just teach from your own personal practice. Teach from your own direct experience as the first step.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's been fascinating hearing Brett talk about all her work on YouTube. But if you want to catch me, you're going to have to come down and see me in the flesh. I teach at Ishta Yoga. You can see the schedule at ishtayoga.com. I'm also doing a workshop on Bhagavad Gita in May, so take a look out for that. I'll announce the date as it gets solidified. The Gita is one of my favorite yoga texts, and it's what I consider an essential owner's manual for the human being. So we'll have more about that, and come and play with me. Let's go back to Brett. So if you were to give your experienced advice to someone who's been teaching yoga, maybe they did their training a handful of years ago and they're feeling pretty confident about what they're doing and they wanted to explore doing something online, how would you advise them to look into that or step into that?
My biggest piece of advice would be to pick a platform that they're interested in, meaning Instagram or YouTube or Facebook or Pinterest or, you know, whatever platform they're naturally drawn to, because doing all this is hard in a sense. Like, it's a lot of work, so you need to kind of go with what you already naturally enjoy. So yeah. Maybe that's Twitter, I don't know. But just figure out what platform you most enjoy, you spend time on the most. And then think about how you could create content for that channel, what it would look like. See what other people are doing. See what you could do the same or differently. And then, you know, the other huge piece of advice is just to be consistent. Like, once you pick that channel, be consistent on it. So if you're picking Instagram, again, it could be once a day, it could be once a week, it could be five times a day. Like, just, it doesn't matter, but whatever it is, be consistent with it. Because I think what I see happen is people play with things and they don't get traction right away, and then they just abandon ship. And that's just not how any of this works. It's like, you have to be in it for the long run, which is why it's really important you naturally enjoy the platform you're spending time on and what
Pick
you're
something
doing.
You want.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So, and then I guess the other thing I just say about that is that there's never been a better time to pursue anything online because it's so easy. I mean, when I was first doing this, I borrowed someone's camcorder as a first step. Like, you can literally do everything on your phone now. You can even edit the whole video on your phone. Like, it's so easy. It's easier than it's ever been. So don't get caught up in all the tech stuff. I mean, a lot of people, the other people think people ask me all the time is what camera to buy. And I'm like, just use your phone. Like, you don't even need a camera. Like, there's, you know, you can always figure out the next level of how you want something to look once you're already in action around whatever it is you're doing. So just start. That's my other biggest advice for people. Like, don't think you need XYZ equipment or X, like, you can do everything you need right now. So just start with that consistent action, and then the other pieces will fall into place.
And on the flip side of that, what would you say about, because there are a great number of people who feel like they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to be on Instagram. They're supposed to be creating a presence. And is there anything that you would say is a way to avoid the kind of thing that doesn't have integrity or it doesn't feel real?
Yeah, well, I think you touched on two different things there. I mean, the first is like feeling pressured to post on social media. That's just, it's hard. It's, our world has changed, you know? It's like there's not really an off button anymore to any career, any path that I know of. But I think you just need to make an intentional choice, like either make an intentional choice to just not do it at all and then don't beat yourself up about the fact that you're not doing it, or to, you know, do it in a way that works with your lifestyle, or to hire it out if you're in a position to do that. I mean, I have people help me with all sorts of aspects of things that I'm doing. And I think that's just a really empowered third chakra place to come from, you know, like decide if it's important or not. And know that the number of followers you have or whatever, it doesn't matter. What matters is, are you really connecting with the people you want to be connecting with? Are they engaged? So I always tell people who take my courses or trainings that, you know, I have a mentor and she has very few Instagram followers. I mean, like less than 1,000. She's a multimillionaire, right? Like, it's not always about the number of followers. It's like a vanity metric. Right. So if you're teaching locally in studios, it's like, do you think those people want to connect on Instagram? Are they there? Like, if you're teaching a therapeutics class to an older population, like, probably they're not. If you're teaching a power flow class and you notice most of the people in your class are like 20 and 30s and, you know, they probably are on Instagram. So you just, I think, try to just leave emotions out of it and just wear your business hat and just figure out what makes sense and then look at the data. Right. I look at my data all the time. It's like, is this worth my energy? Is this worth doing? Am I connecting with the people that I want to be connecting with? I think once you reach a certain level, there is just like a brand staying top of mind thing where you do just feel like a pressure, or, you know, it's just good business practice to, you know, put stuff out there.
Right.
But that's just the world we live in. So anytime I notice myself getting emotional about anything social media related, I just come back to the world has changed. This is just a part of doing business these days. And instead of getting emotional or feeling like I should do more, or I should do less, or it should be that way, or it should be, you know, that's just all self-judgment and shame and uninteresting. Is so I think just focusing on the data and the facts and who you want to connect with is key.
Right.
I don't know if that was helpful.
No, no, totally. And yeah. I think also maybe this was, you said there were two things embedded in what I was saying that, you know, I think that when you do it just because you're supposed to, or just because that's where the world is right now, there's also this potential for the whole value of the thing that was happening on that platform to go down. You know, like if everybody's just putting stuff out to put stuff out, then no one cares. You know, I find myself a little bit with Facebook like that. Mm-hmm. It's much harder for me to even look at anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas there's something about Instagram where that it's because it's not so text oriented. There's still this little bit of spark of, you know, this image attracted me for some reason. So it has a built in a little bit more of this is from me. This isn't just something I'm sharing from somebody else.
Yes.
So it has that magic to it.
Yeah, definitely. I have a friend who teaches a course called The Energetics of Instagram, which is really cool. And I think there's also something to be said for making an intentional decision to just opt out if that's what feels best for you. I always, when I teach about this, I talk about Trader Joe's. You know Trader Joe's, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
They don't do social media. They just made like an internal business decision that it just doesn't make sense for their business. And they're just not on social media at all. And their business is doing great. Like I shop at Trader Joe's like every week.
Right.
There was another psychic intuitive medium that I interviewed on my podcast. And she is hugely successful, very financially doing fantastic. And she only works with people through referral only over email. Like all she has is an email address. She doesn't even have a website, you know? Wow. So I think a lot of times we get caught in thinking that, you know, the world isn't abundant or there's limited resources, or if I don't put myself out on social media, then, you know, I'm not going to receive as much or get as many students or get as much income, or, you know, all of that's just noise. It's just not true, as the two examples I just gave. So I think, you know, like everything, it's mindset, and just changing your mindset around social media, I think, can be a huge relief for folks.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. What a world.
What a world.
So many opportunities.
It is crazy thinking about how much the world has changed, even in just the past couple years. I was doing some research before we got on the podcast, Peter, for a Kundalini course I'm putting together. And it's just so cool because I can just research things so easily. And I really reference books a lot still, especially when it comes to yoga stuff, because the internet can be a little sketchy. But I was thinking about my encyclopedias that I got when I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
And I would like look stuff up, and I was just thinking like, wow, times have changed. It's really amazing how much change can even just happen in, you know, my lifetime. And I'm hopefully not even like a third of the way through my life, you know?
Right.
It's
right.
Just,
well, I mean, just it was amusing for me to hear you say, you know, when I was a kid, I was building websites. Like when I was a kid, there wasn't even an internet.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah. It is amazing. And I think your, you know, that suggestion that you deal with it in a way that works for you is really smart, because it is, everything is new and everything is coming up and everything is changing, and like some of it's going to stay and some of it's not going to stay, and you can just be in your relationship with it, you
know, I mean, I could see a counterculture emerging at some point, right, where it's just like, and you know, somehow all this goes away, or it's not as prominent as it is right now. Or someone was telling me the other day that Lady Gaga was saying at the Oscars, or I don't know anything about pop culture, as it's probably the Grammys, not the Oscars, but I don't even watch TV, but she was saying, I heard this somewhere, that the social media is like the toilet bowl of the internet or something that, right?
Yeah.
So we're just at the beginning, you know, so many of these things could change.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, Yeah, and I think it's in Utica, New York, where there's just like so much social consciousness in the community. You know, they have their own currency that they're using, so there's more bartering and more, smaller sense of community and not the gigantic world of community
Yeah,
that's.
I think people are really hungry for community, and I think that's another piece of advice. I don't know if people want advice, but I'm used to going on podcasts and giving advice, so I'm going to. The I think I'd like to give to other yoga teachers is like figure out how you can create community in your classes, because people don't want to just go to a class and leave. I mean, especially when you could just do a video at home. So I think what's worked well for me online is creating intimacy and community with that Facebook group, and then, again with the paid group, and whether it's retreats or workshops or figuring out how to get your class talking to one another. Even when I taught in studios, I'd host like tea after class once a month or things like that, especially in prenatal. I mean, I went to so many prenatal classes, and you only go to prenatal yoga to meet other pregnant women. I mean, that's the only reason why I was going, right? Like, I know how to do yoga. I can do yoga at home. And the teachers just weren't facilitating those connections. So I think that's just a huge value add if you can figure out how to bring that in, because
And
people
it's
are
cool
craving
because
that.
the thing you're doing online is such a good tool for finding people who want to connect and then telling them, okay, this is how you can connect. I mean, there's this whole web platform Meetup that's a similar idea, right? It's like, how do you reach people who are interested in something and then get them together?
Yes. Meetup is great. That would be a great idea. Like, I mean, if I were more focused on teaching in person, I probably would have a meetup group that was regularly doing like yoga book club or yoga satsang or, whatever, just something to get people together and connected.
Awesome. Well, Brett, thank you so much for having this chat with me.
Thank you for reaching out. It was such an honor to get your email. So really excited to have been on. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And like I say, it's cool to just like stay slightly connected by watching Instagram posts go by and whatnot. But so you're on my mind,
Oh, well, thank
even though
you.
we haven't spoken in a long time.
Yeah, well, you and Wendy are in my heart and in my teaching voice forever. So for that, I am forever grateful.
Well, great. Well, I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Namaste. That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon, rate the podcast, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.